Monster Man, special episode, Selkies.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon backers. And in particular, of Patreon backer Brian. But this is not an episode for Brian. Another reason that this is a special episode is that it is a birthday episode. So happy birthday, Jocelyn. And I hope that you enjoy this episode. The subject of today's episode is the Selkie. So what is a Selkie? The name comes from a word that means seal, specifically referred to the gray seal, but there are lots of different seal species, and as we'll see, some of the other ones are also associated with Selkies. A lot of Selkie stories come from Orkney and Shetland, and these are two groups of islands in the Atlantic Ocean. They're part of Scotland, although they haven't always been. They have their own traditions and their own folklore. There are also Selkie stories from Ireland. There are Selkie stories from Scandinavia and Iceland. You'll sometimes find them called like merfolk or finfolk or just Finns, which I'd say you should not confuse with people from Finland, but actually they are sometimes confused with people from Finland. And a Selkie is a seal that can change into a person, or maybe it's a person that can change into a seal. And this is one of those monsters that I think has its roots in nature, by which I mean if you look at a seal, you can kind of see how people might think that it's sort of human-like. Not that they appear human, because they kind of don't, but just in their expressions, in their expressive eyes, you look at a seal and you can kind of imagine that you can tell what it's thinking. A little bit like dogs. And if you live in a place like Orkney or Shetland, then seals are going to be around where you make your living, maybe, for a lot of the time. I mean, fishing is very important, and the sea is very important to those communities, especially longer ago. And seals, you know, you often find them kind of in port towns or where there are people out fishing. I think the seals also think, oh, you know, hey, maybe I can get some of this fish. Seals kind of cluster around humans sometimes, and you can see how people might come to associate them with this idea of becoming human. Now, like a lot of monsters that come from folktales, stories about the Selkie are not all the same, right? It's not like something that came from a book, something that was made up by one person so that it has rules. This is a story that has many different tellers, and as a result, not all Selkie stories are the same. So we're going to see a couple of different versions of the Selkie, and because we're using this for a game, we can just pick parts of those versions that we like the best. One of the most common ideas in a Selkie story is the idea that the Selkie has a magic seal skin that lets them turn into a seal. And we've already seen some other monsters that have these magic animal skins that let them change shape. For example, the Swan May is a woman who can turn into a swan, or maybe a swan that can turn into a woman. The name just means it's literally swan maiden, like swan young woman. And that's achieved by a magical cloak of swan feathers. And in some werewolf stories, werewolves are able to change into a wolf shape because they have a magic wolf skin that lets them do that. So the idea of wearing animal skin clothes and that letting you become that animal is something that we find in a lot of different folk stories. But are these humans that have put on a magic coat, or are they actually, is that part of the Selkie? That's a good question. One of the most common stories of the Selkie and the Selkie's magic coat is one about a Selkie who is on land for some reason. And when she's on land, she has to take her human form. And that means that she has to, you know, put her coat somewhere. And someone steals it and uses that to make her marry him. So I asked my wife, Allison, who knows a lot more about folktales than I do, and from her collection of folktale books, I found a couple of examples of Selkie stories that have this seal skin in them. So the first one that I'm going to read comes from a book called Icelandic Folk and Fairy Tales, selected and translated by May and Hallberg Hallmundsson. And in this story, the creature isn't called a Selkie, but when I read it, I think you'll see why I think of this as a Selkie. This story is called The Seal Skin. There once was a man in Myrdalr who happened to be walking by the sea cliffs one morning early while most other people were still in bed. Then he came upon the mouth of a cave. Sounds of gaiety and dancing were heard from inside the cave, while outside it, a great many seal skins were lying about. The man took one of the skins, carried it home with him, and locked it away in a trunk. Later in the day, he went by the cave again. This time, a young, beautiful woman was sitting there, stark naked and crying bitterly. She was the seal whose skin the man had taken. After he had brought her some clothes, the man comforted her and took her home with him. She became quite attached to him, but didn't get on too well with others. Many times she would sit and gaze out over the sea. After some time had passed, the man married her. They proved to be quite compatible and had several children. The husband always kept the skin locked away in his trunk and carried the key with him wherever he went. One day, many years later, he went out to fish and forgot the key under his pillow. Others say that he went to Christmas services along with his household, while his wife, who was not feeling well, remained at home, and that he forgot to take the key from the pocket of his work clothes when he changed. Whichever way it was, when he returned home, the trunk was open and his wife, along with the sealskin, gone. She had taken the key, looked into the trunk out of curiosity, and found the skin. Unable to resist the temptation, she then had said goodbye to her children, put on the skin, and plunged into the sea. But before she did, the story goes, she recited these words as if to herself. Of two minds must I be. I've seven children in the sea, and seven more on land. The husband is said to have grieved for her deeply. Later, when he went out fishing, a seal would often circle around his skiff, and sometimes it looked as if tears were running from its eyes. The man had the best of luck in his fisheries ever after, and the sea washed up many things up on his shore. People often noticed that when his children happened to be walking on the beach, a seal would swim offshore along with them and throw them multicolored fish and pretty seashells. But never again did their mother return to land. And this other one is from the collection Scottish Folk and Fairy Tales, selected and edited by Sir George Douglas. It is called The Mermaid Wife. A story is told of an inhabitant of Unst who, in walking on the sandy margin of a voe, which is a creek or a little river or a little sea inlet, saw a number of mermen and mermaids dancing by moonlight and several seal skins strewed beside them on the ground. At his approach, they immediately fled to secure their garbs and, taking upon themselves the form of seals, plunged immediately into the sea. But as the Shetlander perceived that one skin lay close to his feet, he snatched it up, bore it swiftly away, and placed it in concealment. On returning to the shore, he met the fairest damsel that was ever gazed upon by mortal eyes, lamenting the robbery by which she had become an exile and a tenant of the upper world. Vainly she implored the restitution of her property. The man had drunk deeply of love and was inexorable, but he offered her protection beneath his roof as his betrothed wife. The merlady, perceiving that she must become an inhabitant of the earth, found that she could not do better than accept the offer. This strange attachment subsisted for many years, and the couple had several children. The Shetlander's love for his merwife was unbounded, but his affection was coldly returned. The lady would often steal alone to the desert strand. That just means a beach. And, on a signal being given, a large seal would make his appearance, with whom she would hold in an unknown tongue an anxious conference. Years had thus glided away when it happened that one of the children, in the course of his play, found concealed beneath a stack of corn a seal skin, and, delighted with the prize, he ran with it to his mother. Her eyes glistened with rapture. She gazed upon it as her own, as the means by which she could pass through the ocean that led to her native home. She burst forth into an ecstasy of joy, which was only moderated when she beheld her children, whom she was now about to leave, and after hastily embracing them, she fled with all speed towards the seaside. The husband immediately returned, learned the discovery that had taken place, ran to overtake his wife, but only arrived in time to see her transformation of shape completed, to see her in the form of a seal bound from the ledge of a rock into the sea. The large animal of the same kind with whom she had held a secret conversation soon appeared, and evidently congratulated her in the most tender manner on her escape. Before she dived to the unknown depths, she cast a parting glance at the wretched Shetlander. "Farewell," said she to him, "and may all good attend you. I loved you very well when I resided upon earth, but I always loved my first husband much better." So as you can see, these two stories are pretty much the same. And in this story, you know, I've been calling the Selkie a monster throughout this episode because, you know, that's the show. It's Monster Man. But I don't know that the Selkie is really a monster. It seems to me that the husband is a little bit more of the monster. He's keeping his wife on land against her will. She's only really marrying him because she doesn't have any choice. And if he really loved and trusted her, then it seems to me that he would not have to lock up or hide her sealskin. As it is, when she finds it, she goes back to her home the first chance she gets. So obviously, he's doing something very wrong here. This means that the Selkie is more like a person who might need help. And when you have a person who might need help, then you have an adventure. So our first version of the Selkie in Dungeons & Dragons might be as someone, not as a monster that the PCs have to fight, but as someone that they have to help. Someone has stolen the Selkie sealskin, and they might need the PC's help to get it back. Now, for some player characters, the only reason they'll need to help is the satisfaction of doing the right thing. But others might want some kind of reward, and a lot of the time in Selkie stories, the Selkies are quite wealthy because there's the idea that they have sort of gold from shipwrecks or other treasures that might be at the bottom of the sea. And maybe even if she can't pay them, she could do them a favor, because after all, she can turn into a seal, she can, you know, spy on things underwater, she could follow boats. I mean, she has all kinds of abilities that maybe could be useful to the player characters. So a Selkie could be a useful ally if they got her on their side by doing her this favor. On the other hand, they'd be upsetting her husband. So if he was somebody important, you know, a prince or a wizard or something, then that could be a problem for them. So I think that that's a good D&D adventure right there, that the Selkie might need the PC's help. Now, there are some stories in which seal people aren't just one person. We already saw that the merwife had a husband already among the merfolk. And there's another Scottish folktale called The Seal Killer's Adventure, which is about a man who wounds a seal and then is like called down to basically the city or the town of the seal people who live underwater, as you might expect. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's pretty long, but here's the description of the seal person taking the seal killer down to the home of his people. On reaching a stupendous precipice which overhung the sea, his guide told him that they had now reached their destination. "Where is the person you spoke of?" inquired the astonished seal killer. "You shall see that presently," replied the guide. With that, they immediately alighted, and without allowing the seal killer much time, the stranger seized him and plunged headlong with him into the sea. After sinking down, down, nobody knows how far, they at length reached a door, which being open, led them into a range of apartments, filled with inhabitants, not people, but seals, who could nevertheless speak and feel like human folk. And how much was the seal killer surprised to find that he himself had been unconsciously transformed. If it were not so, he would probably have died from the want of breath. And in this story, the seals are called Rhone, which I think just comes from a word that means seal. So in this story, we have a whole community of seal people who live in a network of underwater rooms or caverns. And of course, what I'm describing sounds like a dungeon. So perhaps that area has been abandoned. You know, maybe the Rhone have been driven out of it by some sea monster that's gone down there and taken over their caves. Or maybe the PCs need to go and catch a Rhone who's committed some crime. Or maybe they don't know anything about it and the Rhone just call them down there to get their help. But it sounds like somewhere that could be pretty exciting. I also like how the seal killer is turned into a seal, which helps teach him that it's wrong to kill seals. But also, that's a fun way to get some characters into a place where they couldn't otherwise go. So I've talked about two ways to put a Selkie in your D&D game. Here's the third one. We might not have the Selkie itself show up in the game, or we might, but we might have it be someone's parent, because in a lot of these stories, we've seen that the Selkie has children with a human and is kind of torn about whether to leave them. And in fact, in one of the most famous Selkie stories, it's the other way around. And that's the story of the Great Selkie of Sewell Skerry. Sometimes you will see this called the Grey Selkie or the Great Silkie. Silkie is just another name for Selkie. This is a ballad, so a song, that tells the story of a woman who is nursing her baby, and she's telling her son how she's sad because she does not know where his father is. But his Father returns and reveals that he's a Selkie. The reason that he was sort of missing is that he went off to go live in the sea again, and he gives the mother a bag of gold. So once again, there we see Selkies have gold, and he takes the boy with him to teach him to swim in the sea and be a Selkie. So the child of a Selkie and a human could have these kinds of water powers, or maybe even be able to shapeshift and become a seal like his father. Also, this Selkie seems to be able to see the future, because he predicts that the lady is going to marry again, and she's going to marry a whaler, someone who, specifically a gunner, someone who works the harpoon gun on a whaling ship, and that person is going to unknowingly kill the Selkie. So he seems to have some ability to see the future there. But that could be a fun background to give a character. You know, a mysterious parent, someone that kind of left when they were young, and they've always sort of wanted to find out why. Especially someone who has that background, that you know, they're a sailor or they come from coastal place. Okay, now I know that earlier on I said that Selkies aren't really monsters and they aren't necessarily scary, but they can be, and that's the fourth example of a Selkie that I want to give. I think that a lot of things that aren't frightening could be frightening in the right time and place. And to show you what I mean, I'm going to read you a section from another story. This one is called School Scary, S-K-U-L-E, scary. Oh, I've said scary a couple of times now, if you don't know what a scary is. A scary is, that's a Scottish word that means like a small rocky island, or it might even just be a reef. It's basically somewhere that's smaller than a real island. It's too small for people to live on. And the name School Scary is based on Sewell Scary, like in the story The Great Selkie of Sewell Scary. So it's a reference to that. This is a story by an author named John Buchan. And in this story, a bird watcher has gone out to School Scary, which is this lonely little island, and he's in the middle of a storm. He's soaking wet. He's lost his boat, and he's sort of hoping that that this other boat will come and rescue him. And so finally, he lights a fire to summon the boat to come in and get him. With one of my few remaining matches, I lit the oily waste, and a great smoky flame leapt to heaven. If the half-dark had been eerie, this sudden brightness was eerier. For a moment, the glare gave me confidence. But as I looked at the circle of moving water evilly lit up, all my terrors returned. How long would it take John to reach me? They would see it at once at Skurovo. They would be on the lookout for it. John would not waste time, for he had tried to dissuade me from coming. An hour, 2 hours at most. I found I could not take my eyes from the waters. They seemed to flow from the north in a strong stream, black as the heart of the elder ice, irresistible as fate, cruel as hell. There seemed to be uncouth shapes swimming in them, which were more than the flickering shadows from the flare. Something portentous might at any moment come down that river of death. Someone. And then my knees gave under me and my heart shrank like a pea, for I saw that the someone had come. He drew himself heavily out of the sea, wallowed for a second, and then raised his head, and from a distance of 5 yards looked me blindly in the face. The flare was fast dying down, but even so, at that short range, it cast a strong light, and the eyes of the awful being seemed to be dazed by it. I saw a great dark head like a bull's, an old face wrinkled as if in pain, a gleam of enormous broken teeth, a dripping beard, all formed on other lines than God has made mortal creatures. And on the right of the throat was a huge scarlet gash. The thing seemed to be moaning, and then from it came a sound, whether of anguish or wrath, I cannot tell, but it seemed to be the cry of a tortured fiend. That was enough for me. I pitched forward in a swoon, hitting my head on a stone, and in that condition 3 hours later, John Ronaldson found me. And so once he's been rescued and recovered, he finds out that what he saw was just a walrus. This actually does sometimes happen. That a walrus makes its way down, you know, on the drift ice or whatever, all the way to Scotland. It's very rare, but it does happen. And there's a famous book about it by Compton Mackenzie, or a story in a book, I guess. Anyway, so even though this thing didn't turn out to be a real Selkie, he also calls it a fin in this story. I do think that this story gives some idea of how a Selkie could be frightening, because you have to imagine the landscape of Orkney and Shetland. I don't know if you've ever been there, if you've ever seen what they look like, but they're very harsh places. They're cold, of course. When the weather is bad, it can be very bad. They're quite low. They don't have a lot of trees. And when the wind is bad, it can be quite a forbidding place. So a seal doesn't seem like a very threatening thing when you are on the land. But once you get out into the roaring ocean, then you are in a place where the seal is perfectly adapted to survive. And you are really not. So in a storm at sea, I think that there could be a time when you could treat a Selkie almost like a monster, that it could be very frightening just because it can come and go as it pleases. It can survive this terrible weather, and you would be, you know, clinging soaked to a rock, desperately trying to gasp some air. And if you had done anything to upset the Selkies, I suspect you would be regretting it right about then. So the fifth and final way to include Selkies in your D&D game would be, of course, to just have someone play a Selkie. I guess this ties into the idea of Selkie parents. In fact, the D&D game that I play in has Selkies as a playable race, although no one in our party is actually playing one. But our DM wanted to run a game that was inspired by British legend and British folklore, and one of the stories he chose to include was the Selkie. And I think the fact that people think of Selkies as fairy tale characters made them a good choice there, because it is a game that has a lot of sort of fairy tale parts to it, or folk tale parts maybe. In 5th edition, I don't think that this is really so bad. Like, being able to swim very well is useful, but not incredibly powerful. It's handy. But it's not like everyone complains about people who play Arakocra, because Arakocra can fly, and that can be a little unbalancing. Swimming really well? No, probably not. Selkie pirate could be fun, or kind of a Selkie Viking sort of setting. I think that seascape is a good place for Selkies to be. In a D&D game, I think also you could have, we've seen in the story of the Seal Killer's Adventure, the idea that there's an undersea society. So we can think, what if the Selkies had rivalries between themselves? What if they weren't all on the same side? What if the reason that one of the Selkies was on land was because it might be in danger if it went back to its people? You know, what if the other Selkies, if they knew about this Selkie's children, might try and take them back, and so is kind of keeping them hidden on land? I think there's something to that. I think you could definitely have, in a lower level game, you could have the players come into it when, like the mother in the story of the Great Selkie of Sul Skerry, you know, some local person comes to them and says, my husband or my wife is missing. I can't find them. Can you help me look for them? And of course, it turns out that the reason that they're missing is that they are actually a Selkie and they've gone back to the sea. Maybe, you know, to avoid arousing suspicion among all the other Selkies that they have a human lover. You know, maybe there's a rule that the Selkies can't reveal their existence to the people of the land. And so in that story, you could have some opportunity for the players to try to make peace between these two people. You know, it's not just a fight, although there might be a fight, especially if even the quote-unquote good Selkie, the Selkie who the PCs are looking for, needs to make sure that they don't reveal its secret to the other Selkies. It might try to silence them before they can do anything. It's a great chance for persuasive characters like bards to try and show off a little bit, which they don't always get the chance to do. All right, so that is about all the time that we have for this episode on Selkies. As you can see, they're a monster with a lot of potential. They can be in a lot of different stories. They can be heroes or villains. They can be PCs or NPCs. A lot of great things that you can do with a Selkie. And for me, they embody this image of a sort of natural beauty that at the same time is a little bit lonely and a little bit dangerous. And I think that that's a great image for a fantasy game. So Jocelyn, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to be like Jocelyn and get your own special episode, or if you'd like to be like Brian and get a special episode for the monster fan in your life, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is about to start a new season. And if you pledge now, you could get in on the choice of topic for that season. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at the last monster we'll be reviewing from Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.